This is Northfolk Works, and I'm Hazel Kahn. My guest today is Gideon D'Arcangelo, musician, designer, Orient resident, and organizer of the Song Swap events in Orient's Pocatalk Hall. Gideon is playing his guitar and telling me about his background and the paths that led him to be part of the Northfolk music community. Gideon, I'm just going to tell people what your background is. I know you studied musicology, University of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you spent 5 years with Alan Lomax.
I did.
And I know that now you're a professional designer of public or community spaces. And 4 years ago, you applied that concept of Alan Lomax and public design to the North Fork, specifically to Song Swap. So do you want to talk a little bit about how all those things came together?
Sure. Of course, it wasn't so conscious at the time, but looking back on it, that is how it came together. My wife and I have a home in Orient Village, and we love being part of that community. And in particular, the town hall, Pocatalk Hall, is a wonderful throwback to the 19th century when there were these communal spaces for towns to get together celebrate, debate, organize around things. And Pocatalk Hall is a wonderful part of the Orient community. There was an effort to restore Pocatalk to some of its original beauty. What better thing to do with Pocatalk Hall than to use it as a place to convene singers and musicians, local singers and musicians, to get a chance to show their stuff and share their songs, and in turn raise some funds to take care of the hall. And so that's how I got involved. We decided to organize a singing event that would raise funds to do some of that work. But I really like the idea of using the hall to raise funds for the hall and using the hall for what it is, a very rare opportunity in modern life, I think, to have a place to go, a small, intimate place to go where the community can come together and celebrate together. And I know for me, it's increasingly rare to find a place where you can gather with a few hundred of your neighbors and celebrate your community in a way that's very natural and intimate. And this idea started to come around to me that Pocatalk Hall felt like the community's living room. In my living room and in the living room of my friends that like to play music, we often bring out our instruments and sing and share songs.
So it's informal.
Yes.
It's cozy. It's not commercial in any way.
Exactly. It's very approachable. We didn't use the stage. There's a stage in Pocatalk Hall that's used for plays and whatnot, and that's fine. But we want it to be down on the floor with everyone else and have it feel like sitting on the couch and I would do a song and then you might do a song and then someone else would. And I put my producer's hat on for this and organized it so it also had a nice momentum to it, because I know that those things are important. You know, I've organized many events over the years, and it has to have a certain pace to it, a momentum. And in the course of 2 hours, we were able to put many different local singers up in a wide range of backgrounds, a really diverse range of ages, from teenagers to people in their 80s, men and women, people of all walks of life, many different styles of music.
Were these songs their own songs? I mean, as opposed to well-known songs, or?
It draws on the folk tradition of hootenannies and hoedowns and people getting together and sharing songs that everyone recognizes. Now, in some cases, someone will do a song that they wrote themselves, but it's not that kind of idea. It's more recognizable songs that if you choose to sing along, you can. And if you just want to sit back and listen, that's fine as well. But it's part of more interpreting songs and bringing music to life. Because I think what gets people really excited about these types of events is that mostly people listen to music through speakers from recordings, and the source of music can feel very far away and foreign. The history of music for thousands of years was it was actually something that brought people together in groups. Everyone sharing that same experience at the same time in the same space. And that's what music does. It glues everyone together who's in that space in earshot of the song. And for people that grow up listening to music through speakers on the radio, through MP3s or LPs or vinyl or any of those things, there is this one step removed.
It's mediated.
It's mediated. And so the thing about a group of people bearing their soul and getting up there and bravely singing a song is it's unmediated. And I think people really hunger after that. There's a real joyousness in it. The thing, it's a community music event that we organize there, meaning there's people of all different levels of skill. There's some really amazing musicians that come through. And then there's some other folks that are giving it their best shot. Maybe a young person that just learned how to do that song. And the only criterion is that you have to give it your all. Because it's a community music event, we celebrate them all. As long as you're up there and you really give it your all, it's amazing what people come out with. You mentioned Alan Lomax.
Yeah, I was going to ask you to relate this. It's not just, I mean, you're coming to this not just because you like songs.
Yes.
You have a whole other background.
Well, I studied music and musicology in college and traveled the world a lot after that. And so those two things together led me to working in Alan Lomax's Global Music Research Project in the early 90s. It was at Columbia University and then moved over to Hunter College. Alan Lomax was one of the great figures in American folk music, a great folklorist, a great ethnomusicologist who almost single-handedly spearheaded the folk movement in the United States, him and many others, Pete Seeger, Woody Guthrie, and kind of gave birth to the foundation that became Bob Dylan and those other singers and songwriters that really carried forward. He was interested in any form of creative expression or performance expression. And so he studied the world's music. He studied the world's vocalizing. Then that moved on to studying how people dance and move and how song and dance fit into day-to-day life and how they're such a critical part of our life and essentially a way of reinforcing what it takes to survive and thrive in the world. And so he was a tireless promoter of folk music and of people singing, and particularly took interest in mothers singing lullabies to their babies, or farmers singing songs in the field, or prisoners singing work songs.
Sea shanties as well?
Sea shanties, of course. Really, wherever music was fitting into life, there was Alan Lomax with his recorder, and he felt that the big urban centers like New York and California and Paris and London had plenty of coverage. So he put his energy to going into the Appalachian Mountains or into the Deep South, or later in his life, the Caribbean and parts of Spain and Italy and the British Isles, to find that music that was being not recognized or not recorded or not heard in the airwaves.
How did you work with him?
At the time that I worked with him, he was writing his memoir called The Land Where the Blues Began. And I was a young kid just out of college and essentially was his right hand as he put together that book. And also in that, this was the early 90s, there were some really interesting recordings that we issued through Atlantic Records. Sounds of the South was a reissuing of a great and famous field trip that he had taken through the South in 1959 and 1960. And also he was working on a very early interactive media system to help people search and sort through the world's music that he called the Global Jukebox. And this was a groundbreaking interactive system before the internet. And so I got exposed to many different things working with him. But one of the things that I took from Alan, when I worked with him, I used to make it a goal to learn a song a day. Mm-hmm. Alan was a man who knew 1,000 songs in his head. Those were the people that he ran with in his life. Woody Guthrie, Lead Belly, Josh White, Pete Seeger, you name it. And those were the people that carried 1,000 songs in their head. And there's something about that kind of song recollection that you start to become part of the tradition when you have that many songs at your disposal. And so my goal as a young kid working in that office was to learn a song a day.
So you become part of the data, but your brain becomes part of the database.
Exactly. I probably didn't think of it that way, Hazel, but I certainly, in retrospect, have thought about that. And one of the things that stuck with me, though, about all of that was that Pete Seeger once said about Alan Lomax, he wasn't somebody to dig folk songs up from one graveyard and bury them in another. Mm-hmm. He was always activating them. And one of the ways he activated them was by putting on events. And so he put on song events at Town Hall in New York City, Carnegie Hall, but also in lofts down in the Village, He was part of that whole Beat generation of Woody Guthrie was in New York with him, and they would do song events, and they would bring the music to life and give a place for the music to come to life repeatedly. And that was a big part of it. And so when I got to Orion and I was looking there at Pocatuck Hall, I thought, what a wonderful venue. We have to do some music here.
So were you conscious that you were continuing his legacy?
No, I wasn't. But when we organized the first event, one of the things I did was I'm still part of the Lomax organization. I'm on the board of his Association for Cultural Equity, and I work regularly with Alan's daughter, Anna Lomaxwood. And I thought, oh, we really should have some presence of the Lomax tradition here. It's the first song swap. And so I asked, and they graciously donated a number of recordings and books and song books from the collection to make them available to sell for a few dollars to add to the fundraiser for Pocatuck Hall, but also to inspire people to learn these songs and be exposed to this music.
What is the Association for Cultural Equity?
The Association for Cultural Equity is the foundation that Lomax set up in the 80s, I believe, around this idea of cultural equity, which is that all cultures deserve an equal time and space on the airwaves, and that all cultures are equally valuable. And it was this notion of cultural diversity, almost like biodiversity, where even if there's only 10 people practicing this culture, it still has a viable place alongside a culture that has thousands and thousands or millions of people practicing it. And the more we could preserve cultural diversity, the greater chance we had to adapt and survive. The gap that Alan left was he wasn't alive to enjoy what the internet would make available. And in fact, many of his thoughts about cultural diversity are best supported by something as powerful as the internet. And when it's paired with the inexpensive video recorders and audio recorders that are now out there, essentially it's possible to realize Alan's dream, which was that every culture would be able to celebrate itself and find itself in the musical and video record.
Record itself.
Yes, record itself and produce itself.
We've gone down that whole road of Alan Lomax and the music. Let's go back a bit to this other part of your work, really.
Yes.
It's what you get paid to do, right?
Yes. My main work is designing public experiences. Okay. And so in doing that, that can have a lot of different meanings. But after I worked with Lomax, I went on to work in a firm that designs public experiences at the time, particularly for museums, but really for any place that where the public is gathering in a social environment. And the work that I do is designing places for community engagement. Howard Schultz of Starbucks talks about the third place being something that's desperately needed.
Well, listen, here I have to step in. Wasn't Howard Schultz probably doesn't give credit to Ray Oldenburg, who actually wrote the book.
The third place?
It's called The Great and Good Place, but he coined the phrase. And I actually have interviewed him for my other radio program. I think he wrote that book in the 60s.
I need to read that book. Yeah, so therefore you understand the kind of work we do, because essentially there is a demand for social space in modern life to be created. And sometimes it's in museums, sometimes it's in public parks. Increasingly, it's in cafes or stores or any place that's managing a space nowadays.
Yeah, but for the demand is to have a place that's not home and that's not work.
Exactly.
I mean, looking at it from the user's point of view.
Exactly. Exactly. And so essentially, we've built a design practice around creating such spaces.
The museum experience is not just a transient.
No, it's usually a permanent thing that we'll design, which is essentially a new museum program. Really, the evolution of museums has been from presentation of artifacts and sort of learning environments to participation environments where they're more hands-on and interactive to now more of a social interaction space where people are having a variety of ways to engage with the topic that's being discussed. So the sort of design work that I do relates to that evolution. And what we do is think about how can we create opportunities for people to feel more connected with their local environments and more connected to their local communities. Case in point, let me tell you an example of that, because that's really what helped. Recently, we designed a community center in inner city Cleveland. Our client is the PNC Bank, which is based in Pittsburgh. The bank has this social responsibility idea that they should help lift up the communities where they do business, but they didn't really know how to go about that. So they worked with me and my firm, ESI Design, to design this center that engaged the youth in the community, that engaged the small businesses in the community, that engaged the elderly of the community in a series of programs that promoted intergenerational dialogue and financial literacy learning and a number of things.
Did they oversaw the programs as well? Or?
We designed the programs, but then they hired a staff to oversee them. Mm-hmm. And so experience design involved designing the space. It also involved designing any of the media or the interactive websites or tools that go with it. And then thirdly, the programs themselves. What were the actual ideas? A program about recording the local culture in the community, or interviewing your grandparents about a recipe, or any number of things where we empowered people in the community with cameras and recorders to help start the conversation about learning and knitting the community back together. That just opened up in October last year. So that's an example of what a community engagement design is. It's those three things: physical, media or digital, and then programmatic piece that can stimulate a community to get tighter.
Well, and you said building them back together. So in a way, it has a remedial function too in Cleveland.
Yes, it is. This is a community. It's called Fairfax, which is really on the edge. Like, it could start to really become disintegrated, but it's also, there's a lot of good work going on in that community. And with a boost, it could really lift up and become a really viable, vibrant place to work. And so the hypothesis is you can put this community center in there and it might accelerate or catalyze some of that reintegration of the community. It's very exciting.
Gideon D'Arcangelo is playing his guitar and talking about music on North Fork Works on WPKN 89.5 FM. This is Hazel Kahn. You said it was very exciting to do this work. I was thinking, though, that the designing the space that you talked about in Cleveland, you were actually building it from scratch in some way?
Yes.
Whereas Pocatok Hall is already there.
Yes.
So you somewhere in something you wrote or said, I saw this idea of designing spaces and activating them with community programs.
Yes.
Not necessarily music, of course.
Yes.
But Pocatok Hall has been there for how long? I don't know.
I don't know when it first began, but I know it goes back to the 19th century.
Okay. So it's been there all this time doing whatever it does.
Yeah.
And now, you know, in a sense, the community here on the North Fork is not like the Cleveland community. It's not in danger of disintegrating.
No.
Though, of course, it could do with more youth participation. So talk about that idea of, maybe you've already talked about it.
No, activating a space.
Mm.
I'd love to talk about that. One thing I've learned from my design work, you can create a space, but if you don't activate it, it is just beautiful but dead. Polka Duck Hall is active. That's what I marvel at. You go in, there's almost every day there's something happening in there. It's the community space. It wasn't in any way that it wasn't activated, but it was a great opportunity to join into that activity and be part of what it is to create that space and make it part of the community. I think this is a great segue to talk about our friend Anne McKay.
That's exactly.
Because 4 years ago, you know, a simple thing, we learned that the town hall needed a new floor. And so I thought, what better thing to do than organize a song swap? And I made up that name, by the way.
You did.
I did. And I've since found it elsewhere. So maybe I'm not the only person who's ever used that expression. But it just popped into my head. I like the sound of it because it sounded participatory and would sound like a different than a performance, which we hoped for it to be.
Yeah, so it's generous. A song swap is generous.
That's right.
It's not about the ego of the performer.
Exactly. I'll do a song and then you'll do a song. We'll share one back and forth and maybe we'll pass it on to our friend to try one as well. And so it has that kind of feeling to it. And I expressed the interest in doing this, and within moments, it seemed days, I was ushered to meet Anne McKay, because they said, if you want to do something like this, you must do it with Anne McKay. And so that was my wonderful opportunity to be introduced to her.
This was the first song swap.
The first song swap 4 years ago, where we thought this, it was just an idea, and all roads led to her. And she was, I think, in her late 70s at the time, and had been part of the Orient community for decades upon decades, grew up here as a child. And she had been part of events doing songs in this community going way back to the 30s, 40s, 50s. She'd been doing events at Polka Duck Hall back then. So this was nothing new. It was just part of a line of tradition, and I just was bringing some new energy to it, I guess, and she enjoyed that. So we co-organized the first song swap together, which was a great experience. I didn't really know too many people in town that played music. She knew everybody. So she called up her people and said, "We're doing this thing," and she coached me on how to do it, and she would say things like, "You have to start strong. You have to end strong," you know, things like that, kind of truisms of how you organize an event. And she said, "You should do this song," and so on and so forth. And at that first song swap, she performed two songs and brought out her dulcimer, which is a stringed instrument, for those who don't know, that you play with it on your lap. A dulcimer that she had built herself. She'd gone to the Greenport Library, I think, back in the 60s, and taught herself how to build her own instrument. And that's what she performed on that night.
For those who weren't here before last time, this is an Appalachian dulcimer. It has three or four strings, and it has it's fretted differently than a guitar. And it was originally a drone instrument, just like the bagpipe. And it was played with tune or harmony on the first string. Here's sort of an example, if I can remember it. That's Jesse James, for those who know it. Once it got in the hands of the singer-songwriters, it got very complicated, the instrument. I played it pretty simply.
It was such an amazing experience to do this with her, and we became fast friends and continued to work on this event.
I mean, she was also, from what I read, she was called, somebody described her as a force of nature. And she was very involved with the history, not only of the North Fork, but also of women. And I think she was a very renowned lesbian, a very powerful lesbian.
From what I understand, she was really part of the first generation of women out here that were openly gay and proud of it and had to fight hard to stay in the conversation here out in the community. And she loved a good fight, from what I understand. And she was a strong-willed, strong-voiced woman who really paved the way for many people, men and women, after her.
And now the song swap is being named after her.
Yes, it was really quite something, Hazel. Last year, Anne performed at the first song swap and co-organized it with me. Year two, I organized it, and we gave her honorary organizer title. But she didn't do as much that year, but she did perform again and did two songs at it. And then last year, she had taken ill. And then a song swap's on a Saturday every year. On Thursday before song swap last year, Anne passed away. So it was a very emotional time for everybody. But we spontaneously dedicated every song to her. And there was a real energy, of course, of remembering and loving her and celebrating her at last year's song swap. And then as we thought about it this year, we thought, let's just name the event after her. So this is the fourth annual Anne MacKay Song Swap, and as we continue them, we'll always have her name as part of it.
Does somebody want to come and perform? What do they have to do? Do they have to call you? Or?
Pretty much. That's how it's organized. I mean, I've always... It's not like an open mic event. That's a wonderful thing to do as well, but it's a little more curated, and that's how Anne and I did it the first year. She sort of told me who the folks were that liked to sing, and we went and sought them out, and we put together a program, if you will. So it's somewhat organized. So really the only criterion is I try to keep it within 2 hours. It runs from 7 to 9. But we really like to include people of all different skill levels. That's a real big part of it. It's not so much about being a virtuoso or being amazing at it. It's just about sharing. Now, and that doesn't mean that people don't try to put the best quality to it. I just came from a rehearsal today with a girl who's 9 years old. She's got a wonderful voice, and so we're going to put a song together with her because it reminds me of when I was coming up. People would do the same things for me in my small town where I grew up, and to get a chance to sing in front of an audience, it's a great experience. It's really memorable. I grew up in upstate New York in a small rural farming community where we had opportunities to do this sort of thing. And I think I remember how meaningful it was to share a song with a group of people. And so it's nice to give that back.
Will the money, because there's a ticket price.
Yeah, it's a very nominal ticket price come in. It's not a big fundraiser in that way. But all that money then goes to Polka Duck Hall because it's the hall of the town. And so it'll go towards renovations, caretaking of the hall, upkeep of the hall. The first year was we called it the floor raiser to raise money for the floor. And then last year we called it the heat raiser to raise money for a new furnace. Mm. And so I would expect we're still raising money for the new furnace. The money will always fold back into the hall and the caretaking of the hall. So to put to some good purpose in keeping the hall open.
People always say the North Fork is special. But I think that whatever that special is, it's very different for each person. Mm. So I wonder how it is for you.
There's something very special about the scale of life here that is increasingly precious. It's the social scale. People really are hungry for places to go. In that third place, as we talk about it. So there's home and there's work. But then there's places like Pocatuck Hall or a small community event where it really feeds a part of the soul that I think is elusive to feed. So something about the scale of the social life out on the North Fork and in Orient is very special to me. I get to really meet my friends and see my friends in a different way.
Gideon D'Arcangelo talking about his life and work with music, with songs, and with designing community places. Song Swap is happening on Saturday, May the 17th at Pocatuck Hall in Orient at 7 p.m. North Fork Works is heard on WPKN 89.5 FM on the first Wednesday of every month at 7:30 p.m. North Fork Works is produced by Tony Ernst. North Fork Works programs are archived on hazelkahn.com. The music on this program was arranged and performed by Gideon D'Arcangelo. You can contact Gideon at gideon@listeningin.org.